Good afternoon, everyone. It is a little bit short of 12 o'clock. I'll wait for a couple other people to join in here. Eric Meyer from Fisher Broyles and the Employer Handbook. Thanks for joining me today. I see a bunch of people signing in on Zoom. Great. We're doing this on Zoom and on Facebook Live. Bear with me. I am a IT department of one today. So I'm going to try and bring y'all up to speed on everything that's happening. As I reach for my notes here, I apologize, it's going off screen. Everything that's happening, the First Families coronavirus bill. Also, we're going to do a little Q&A. Bear with me 1 second as I readjust my screen. All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. It is 12 o'clock now. Again, Eric Meyer from Fisher Broyles and from the Employer Handbook. I am, as you know, I am an employment lawyer. I am a employment lawyer that's drinking from a fire hose recently, as I'm sure you can imagine. But I'm going to try and do what I can to bring y'all up to speed on everything that's going on with the House bill. And I got a bunch of questions that you guys submitted. Thank you very much about the House bill and also some COVID-19 questions general. So let's get to it. Yesterday, as I alluded to in my blog post today, there were some changes to the House bill that is now going over to the Senate. Let me cover what those changes are real quickly. The changes to the FMLA portion, the expanded definitions of parent and family member that were in the bill that was passed over the weekend are now gone. So parent means just the same as it would under the regular FMLA. And there is no definition of family member under the regular FMLA, so don't worry about that. You can now take the emergency FMLA for coronavirus. And it is limited now to caring for a son or daughter under the age of 18 if school or daycare is closed due to coronavirus and the parent can't telework. So that begs the question, what about intermittent leave, right? What if an employee is home with a child whose school is closed and has to care for him or her for a couple of hours, but then has to work for a couple of hours, right? Sometimes you can't do both at the same time. Sometimes you can. Can you take intermittent leave for the time in which you can't work and you're actually taking care of the child? I don't know. I think I opened up an avenue for a couple of plaintiff's lawyers to try and work that angle. But I suspect that the labor secretary is going to address that when regulations are issued, or maybe we'll see something in the Senate bill that addresses that. But intermittent leave was originally not going to be in the bill, and then it was taken out, so it's silent. We'll see what happens there. Another big change to the emergency FMLA portion is that the 14-day initial unpaid period is now down to 10 days, and the employee can elect to run a bank of paid sick leave concurrently. In the original bill that was passed over the weekend, the employer was not allowed to require that paid sick leave run concurrently. In the version of the bill with the technical changes that passed yesterday, that part was taken out. So can the employer require that paid leave from your paid time off run concurrently? Days of intermittent FMLA? The answer is maybe. Paid leave 10 under emergency FMLA is capped at $200 a day, $10,000 in the aggregate. Also, here's something I missed the first time around. I apologize, folks. The first time around when I missed it, there are no private lawsuits allowed against small employers. So employers with under 50 employees for failing to provide emergency FMLA. So if you're a regular FMLA employer, you've got the 50 or more employee headcount, you could be sued privately for not providing the emergency FMLA. But for folks, for employers, small employers under 50, you can't be sued privately. You could be sued by the Secretary of Labor, by Department of Labor, excuse me, but you can't be sued privately. So those are the big changes to the emergency FMLA that are in the changed House bill. And let me run through quickly the ones that are in the paid sick leave changes that are in the new House bill. First, the paid sick leave is limited to the following six types of leave. First, the employee is subject to a federal, state, or local quarantine or isolation order related to COVID-19. The employee has been advised by a healthcare provider to self-quarantine because of COVID-19. Third reason is the employee is experiencing symptoms of COVID-19 and is seeking medical diagnosis. The fourth reason is the employee is caring for an individual subject to or advised to quarantine or isolate. The employee is caring for a son or daughter whose school or place of care is closed, or the child care provider is unavailable due to COVID-19 precautions, or the employee is experiencing substantially similar conditions as specified by the Secretary of Health and Human Services in consultation with the Secretaries of Labor and Treasury. That's a mouthful. So those are the six reasons. Employers can amend existing PTO policies after enactment. So let me pause there for a second. In the original bill that was passed early in the Saturday hours, like just after midnight on Saturday morning, it said that after enactment of the law, the employer could not change its own PTO rules. That part is now missing from the revised bill. So theoretically, that means that an employer can change its PTO rules after the law takes effect. All right. Oh, someone just asked. I'm sorry. I'm seeing some comments flashing by. Someone asked if we're live right now. Yeah, we're on. Hopefully everyone can hear me okay. And let me look over. Yeah, hopefully people on Zoom can hear me all right. Oh, gosh. There are 51 participants on Zoom. Thank you all for joining, and thank you for joining on Facebook as well. Let me see if I can, hold on, I lost my screen. Bear with me one second. Oh. There we go. I'm back. Sorry about that, folks. Again, I'm doing this by myself today, so I apologize for any technical difficulties and any hiccups. As I was saying, employers probably can amend their PTO policies after this bill, or when this bill gets enacted and becomes law, but paid sick leave must run first before your own PTO. So if your employee has a bank of PTO that they've accrued already with you, this paid sick leave runs before that. They don't run concurrently, it runs consecutively. And then after the paid sick leave runs, then your PTO can run. Paid sick leave is capped at $511 per day, or $5,110 in the aggregate for the first three reasons for taking leave. So basically for yourself, if you're taking paid sick leave for yourself for coronavirus reasons, it's $511 a day. And when you're caring for someone else, it is $200 per day. Secretary of Labor can exclude certain healthcare providers, emergency responders, and small businesses, fewer than 50. So there you go. Now, I've got those are the big changes from the original paid sick leave bill. Families First Coronavirus bill that passed in the wee hours of Saturday morning to the one that corrected for technical changes. Those are the big changes I've highlighted. Will we see additional changes from the Senate bill? Yeah, probably. Hopefully the Senate doesn't pass that bill while we're doing this chat, because then, you know, we'll have wasted our time here. So I don't mean to be selfish, but at least maybe wait until after this is over. But once the Senate does make its changes, and I am, of course, speaking tongue-in-cheek, once the Senate does make its changes, I will run through those in a blog post, and maybe we'll have a follow-up chat again if people are into that. So it is 12:10. I got about 20 more minutes to do this, and I got a bunch of questions. When I say a bunch, I've got like, I didn't write them all down. I've got like 100 questions that people submitted. So I'm going to try and get to as many as I can. All right. I apologize if I don't get to yours. And remember the disclaimers, folks. Okay. I should have said this at the outset. Remember the disclaimers. Nothing I say here creates an attorney-client relationship between us. Nothing I say here is legal advice. I'm a lawyer. I'm giving tips. I'm talking about hypothetical questions, but none of this is legal advice, all right? If you have questions, specific questions, please consult with your own legal counsel, okay? All right, with those caveats out of the way and those disclaimers out of the way, let me see if I can answer some reader questions here. First question. What are the provisions, if any, for smaller non-FMLA employers? Okay. Well, both the emergency FMLA section and the paid sick leave sections cover government employers and private employers of fewer than 500 employees, okay? So if you're a smaller non-FMLA employer, let's say you have 20 employees, you're gonna be covered here for both the emergency FMLA and the paid sick leave portions as well, okay? For regular FMLA, that's so not related to taking time off to care for a child whose school is closed, right? So your own serious health condition, someone else's serious health condition, that's still, employer coverage threshold is still 50 or more employees in 20 or more calendar weeks in the current or preceding year. Now, if someone has coronavirus, one of your employees has coronavirus, and you're a larger employer, right, and they satisfy all of the prerequisites, work for the employer for 1 year, 1,250 hours, they work at a location where there's 50 or more employees within 75 miles, they get the doctor's note, the certification, so on and so forth, then theoretically, that's a serious health condition too, even though it's not mentioned in the emergency FMLA set. Keep that in mind. Let's get into the higher threshold questions. Just confirming this for employers, under 500 only, or does it apply to employers with over 50 employees? These rules apply to government employers and private employers of fewer than 500 employees. That's for the emergency FMLA. And again, for the paid sick leave, it applies to, again, same groups, government employers and companies with fewer than 500 employees for the paid sick leave portions under the Families First Coronavirus Bill. Do you know how the new law will apply to parent subsidiary relationships? If the parent corporation has over 500 employees with a sub that has under 500 employees, what goes on? Well, I would direct you to the Department of Labor's website where there are new rules on joint employer relationships. This is just my guess. If there's not a joint employer relationship, I'm gonna say the parent is not covered if they have more than 500 employees, and the sub is covered because they have fewer than 500 employees. If they are a joint employer, then maybe you're not covered for purposes of the emergency FMLA and the paid sick leave, because in the aggregate, you'd be treated as having more than 500 employees. The 500 employee threshold, how should employers determine this? That's a good question. They removed the 20 plus calendar week requirement, as crazy as it seems. There are those employers who float between 490 and 510 employees on a regular basis. So will it be their size at time of request, like FMLA employee eligibility, or at the time the bill passes, or some other crazy standard? That's a good question. I'm going to use my first "it depends" today, and it depends on what the Secretary of Labor says, because I think that's something where the Secretary of Labor is going to have to pass a regulation to clarify that. All right. Here's the next set of questions. Interesting that they did not include large employers. Politics in campaign season, or am I just skeptical? Here's the related question. Is there similar legislation planned for large businesses? Is there any understanding as to why 500 plus employee businesses are not included? I'm not aware of any specifically. However, my sources tell me that the 500 plus were excluded because they likely provide paid sick leave anyway. And if the Treasury is going to fund this through tax credits, it would be too expensive to fund it for employers of 500 plus employees. I agree with the latter, that it's going to get pretty expensive if the Treasury is going to fund this through tax credits. I'm not so sure about the former. That is to say, I don't know that, or I wouldn't assume that all businesses or nearly all businesses with 500 plus employees, especially in the service industries, offer paid sick leave for all their employees. All right. Will there be a waiver for smaller businesses to apply for as an exception to the 500 or fewer employee newly revised FMLA coronavirus threshold? Let me go through that really quickly. The Secretary of Labor can issue regulations to exclude certain healthcare providers and emergency responders, and businesses with fewer than 50 employees, so not your ordinary FMLA employers. Businesses with fewer than 50 employees, if it would jeopardize the business as a going concern. So I've been getting calls from clients that are fretting about how they're going to be able to pay out FMLA, earned sick leave, businesses in the service industry, businesses that may be affected by mandatory shutdowns. The Secretary of Labor is empowered to exclude those businesses, the ones that have fewer than 50 employees, from coverage under both the FMLA and I believe for the paid sick leave as well. How does this bill impact nonprofits? Sorry, folks, it impacts them the same way as it applies to for-profits. You will not find the word profit. Forget not-for-profit, forget nonprofit. You don't find the word profit anywhere in the Family First coronavirus bill. Sorry about that. What is the effect on a nonprofit which employs more than 500 people? You're not covered. Will this cover local government under 500 employees? And the answer is yes. We'll also cover local government with more than 500 employees. Under the employee number count as a global company, this is the question. For employee number count as a global company, I assume it's total count, not just those who work in the US. No, that is incorrect. Remember, under the FMLA, when you're determining who is an eligible employee and whether the employer is covered, you do not cover, you do not include employees that work outside of the domestic United States. So I would assume, I'm making a bit of an assumption here, I would assume that for the FMLA portion of this bill, that overseas employees do not count. Now, the paid sick leave portion is silent, and we don't have any sort of equivalent, but I would imagine that the Secretary of Labor is going to want some continuity here. So I'm guessing that overseas employees aren't going to count in terms of the employee threshold for that portion of the bill either. Next question. Would this bill cover all employees that met the day's work restriction, including part-time and on-call? For emergency FMLA, you just have to be employed for 30 days. There's no distinction between part-time and full-time. The bill is silent about on-call. For paid sick leave, yes, to full and part-time employees. They're both going to be covered. The bill is also silent about on-call. So not sure what to do about that, about the on-call employees, but you should prepare as if you're going to have to provide both forms of leave to folks who are working full-time and part-time. Indeed, in the paid sick leave section, there's a whole part about different ways to calculate the paid sick leave for full and part-time employees. Would this bill cover all employees? I just did that question. I apologize. Next question. Will an employer who already has a plan in place for employees to work from home have to let employees take the time as FMLA instead? Well, the answer is simply no. If you can work from home, then you're not eligible for paid sick leave, and you're not eligible for emergency FMLA. Does this new bill apply to me as I am religious exempt? There are no exemptions in the bill for religious organizations, so presumably if you have fewer than 500 employees, you are covered. If an employee has PTO available and has to take time off either because they are ill or are self-quarantining, can we make them take the PTO? Employees feel like that penalizes them. Okay, so we're talking about a company here that has its own PTO system. So let's juxtapose that against what this bill says. If an employee takes off because they're self-quarantining, okay, then they're going to be eligible for the emergency paid sick leave. They're not going to be eligible necessarily for the emergency, or they're not going to be eligible for the emergency FMLA. They may be eligible for regular FMLA, okay? But regarding your own PTO and how that might work, I would look to your employee handbook to see what that says. Also check state and local law about how your PTO may interface with, say, like I practice law in the state of New Jersey, among other places, and there is a very aggressive earned sick leave law. So I would be sure to check my earned sick leave law to see what I'm allowed to do and what I'm not allowed to do, even if I have my own PTO policy. All right. Next question. Am I reading it correctly that the first 14 days of FMLA can be unpaid, but following that must be paid? Yes, if you are reading the initial bill that passed on Saturday. Now, the new bill that passed yesterday winnows the 14-day period down to 10, and the employee can elect to run paid sick leave concurrently. It appears as if the employer may be able to do the same thing. Next question. And I've got about 8 minutes left in this chat. I know I scheduled the Zoom session to shut down at 12:30, but I'll go over time a little bit on Facebook if I have to get through some of these questions. Let's see. Paid sick leave FMLA interplay. It seems like FMLA, you need to wait 2 weeks until you get 2/3 pay, but in the paid sick leave, you get it immediately. It seems like, excuse me. Did I say 14 days? I meant 2 weeks, 10 days now. It seems like an employee who has worked for 30 days with us would get their first 10 days, 2 weeks paid via paid sick leave, and then their next 2 weeks paid at 2/3 FMLA. It's a bit of a weird hypothetical. I'm sorry, I botched it a little bit. A little bit difficult to follow along with that. But basically, for a longer tenured employee, someone who's been with the company for, let's say, 6 months, it is unclear to me, having read the act pretty carefully, whether the paid sick leave and the emergency FMLA run concurrently or consecutively, okay? So on the one hand, you've got, if it's concurrent, that makes sense because the employee should enjoy the immediate FMLA protections, but there are also anti-discrimination and anti-retaliation protections built into the PSL law, the paid sick leave law. So I'm not sure yet whether paid sick leave and emergency FMLA start at the same time, or whether it's paid sick leave for 2 weeks and then the emergency FMLA kicks in. Now, I realize there's not true overlap too. There's only going to be true overlap if someone is taking time off to care for a child who is out of school because of school shut down because of coronavirus. But I guess we'll get better guidance from the Secretary of Labor soon on that. Oh, here's an interesting question that I haven't seen come up before. Do we still have the key employee provision with the Emergency FMLA Expansion Act? Good question. And let me just remind folks, under certain circumstances, an employer may deny job restoration under the regular FMLA to key employees. A key employee is a salaried FMLA eligible employee who is among the highest paid 10% of all employees employed by the employer within 75 miles of the employee's work site. The bill that passed the House is silent about key employee coverage, so I think it probably would come into play. But again, I suspect that the Secretary of Labor may address that. But I would assume for now that it could come into play. Someone asked a paid sick leave clarification question. And it says the bill states that the employees are, the emergency FMLA section. I apologize, folks. The bill states that employees are paid out at 2/3 of their regular rate of pay for hours they would have normally worked. The person says, we have employees who are 40 standard hours, but due to staffing shortages are working 50 to 60 hours per week. It varies. Are we required to include overtime wages as well in this calculation? And the answer is no. You pay out at the regular rate of pay. Regular rate under the Fair Labor Standards Act does not include overtime. Is the employer paying the wages for the FMLA and the paid sick leave? Yes. The employer is paying for the FMLA and paid sick leave. What if the business does not have the cash flow support payment of leave to employees not working? If you have fewer than 50 employees, the Secretary of Labor has the power to exempt you otherwise. I'm sorry. What sort of documentation is required and expected about all this? Good question. There is a notice provision. You're just supposed to provide as much notice as is reasonable under the circumstances, as is foreseeable. But in terms of documentation, I would fall back on regular FMLA. And you know, in a situation like this, you know, use your best judgment too. For example, in New Jersey, I know just from watching the news that all schools are closed, right? So I don't necessarily need that much documentation. If I know someone has kids, right, I'm not going to ask them to produce a birth certificate. So try and be reasonable under the circumstances. What if the business closes down in response to coronavirus for a week or two? Do they still have to pay sick leave under this act? I don't think so. However, in some states, again, falling back to New Jersey, if you are ordered closed, if you run a movie theater or a fitness center, you still need to pay paid sick leave under state law, excuse me. When will reimbursement from the government be available? That is each calendar quarter as tax credits against Social Security. Do the tax credits still apply to businesses over 500? Come on, don't be greedy. I don't think so. When Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, said the Treasury would make advances to cover the costs, is that only for businesses under 500 employees? Yes. I'm pretty sure it is, but we'll see what that looks like. I don't know what costs businesses over 500 would have in connection with these laws because they're not covered. Does advances imply that it's a loan? Sounds like it, unless you get the tax credit. Another person asked about a nonprofit and tax credits, and I assume the rules are the same. The bill is silent, and I'm not a tax lawyer, so call your attorney to ask about that. Someone asked me, based on how I'm reading this bill, gig workers actually could be covered by the paid sick leave portion of this bill if they are self-employed, which they are. Thoughts? Correct. They are covered. Gig workers are covered. Now, they can't pay themselves paid sick leave, but what will happen is they'll get a tax credit when they file their income taxes. Although the new bill, the one with the technical changes that was just passed yesterday, limited the amount of the tax credit. Those are all of the specific bill-related questions. I just noticed I'm getting a gift from Zoom. They are removing the 40-minute time limit on the group meeting. So we're running into overtime, but don't worry, no one's going to get cut off. We can go a couple extra minutes. I know I kind of scheduled this for a half hour. If people have to go, that's totally fine. I'll hang in there. I have about 5 more questions, and maybe I'll skim through what's going on the Facebook stream to see if I can answer any other questions on the fly. But I don't want to. I want to respect you've got busy schedules. I'm not the only one drinking from a fire hose. I'm sure you guys are quite busy too. So, thank you again for attending today and for hanging in there with me. Let me get to these remaining questions. Can we shame coworkers that don't wash their hands? Yes, you can shame coworkers that don't wash their hands, unless the person has a known disability, in which case that could contribute to a hostile work environment. So don't do that. Have there been any state or local laws passed regarding leave, et cetera, that may be affecting employers? Folks, yes, I'm sure there are. Maybe call your lawyer about that one. And heck, if your lawyer hasn't communicated to you yet about paid sick leave locally that's impacting you, or state leave, or hasn't communicated with you about what we're talking about today, maybe get a new lawyer, okay? Just a pro tip there. Last couple of questions. HIPAA and confirmed cases. How much information do I need to or can I give employees if their coworker has a confirmed case? Good question. Tough one. I've been dealing with this with clients. What you don't want to do is you don't want to identify the person by name because of HIPAA, right? You don't want to announce that, hey, Sally has come down with COVID-19. That's not cool, and that may violate HIPAA. But what you do want to do is you do want to arm Sally's coworkers with enough information so that, you know, you can make important decisions and they can make their own important decisions to protect their health. So if you learn that Sally, who works in your workplace, has developed COVID-19, you may have obligations under OSHA to report that. But you may also, you probably should also tell folks that have been working with Sally that they should self-quarantine, that they should contact their healthcare provider. You may need to contact your state and local health department to get further advice from them. So avoid using names, but do share information that impacts Sally's coworkers' health and well-being. And the last question I have, and I kind of did a question cutoff. I printed out about 35 questions, and there were literally like 60-something more. I just didn't think I could cover them. Again, if you think I should do a follow-up chat another day this week, email me, send me a message on Facebook, LinkedIn, Zoom, whatever, and I'd be happy to do a follow-up, time permitting, later this week. We're probably going to need to address what's going on with the Senate bill anyway. Last question of the day. This is a fairly specific question, but it may relate to other people as well. My mom works at an airport, and her stores are not closing, hence putting her in harm's way. She is 71. Is there a way that she can ask them to consider her age as a factor in being more susceptible to the coronavirus and not letting her work? And my non-legal advice would be, don't frame it in terms of age. Frame it in terms of, well, if she has some sort of a disability. And, you know, not to be too flip, but the way the Americans with Disabilities Amendments Act is phrased, we pretty much all have a disability in some way, shape, or form. But if she can get medical documentation to support that she has a mental or physical condition that substantially limits one or more major life activities, then that could start an interactive dialogue and may enable her to get a reasonable accommodation. Now, if she works in retail in a store, it may not be feasible for her to, let's say, telecommute, but maybe a brief leave of absence. That could be possible as a reasonable accommodation. I don't know. I don't want to give too specific legal advice. I'm trying to keep it generic there, but that's my generic piece of non-legal, non-attorney client creating advice. All right, folks, it is, we're 5 minutes into overtime. I'm gonna cut it off for today. I think I'm recording this on Zoom. I hope if all went well, I recorded this properly on Zoom. So I will post this, if I did record it properly, on my blog, The Employer Handbook, theemployerhandbook.com tomorrow. Once again, I'm Eric Meyer. Thank you so much for joining me. Guys, hang in there, stay strong. You are the backbone of what's keeping your companies running here. Everyone is leaning on you in this time. And I'm gonna step off my soapbox now. But thank you for all that you do. Again, I'm Eric Meyer, theemployerhandbook.com. I'm an employment lawyer at Fisher Broyles, fisherbroyles.com. Check me out, check us out, check out my blog, and I will be back with another blog post tomorrow. Bye, everyone. See ya.